I was a kid, the church I went to was a Slovak church, and they were mostly babushkas, these old women with their, and these my grandparents. My impression was that Poles and Slovaks were rather religious people, reserved people. I don't want to say dour exactly, but reserved and serious and unlikely to party or to, they were pretty religious people. And I kind of had that impression from, that's what I was expecting to find in Poland. I had a priest friend who said, oh, you're going to the one place in the world where people really understand Christianity. Well, that was not my impression at all. Now, understand, I was working with academicians, with people like yourself and with people at the universities that spoke English. They were Christian in their deep down fundamental belief. I mean, they believed in Christian fundamentals. They celebrated Christmas and Easter, and but I didn't, and they were not at all reserved. They were warm and fun-loving and caring and full of life, relaxed, skeptical, sarcastic, all those things that I wasn't expecting. You know, the one contrast for me was, you remember, Katowice isn't all that far from the border of Poland, from the southern border. And I didn't have a car my first year, but I did my second and third year, you remember. And at any rate, Monique had a car her first year. I would go to Austria, to Vienna. And to get there, I'd cross what was then Czechoslovakia through Brno. And my impression there was, I'd go in the middle of the day, and sometimes on a weekend, it was like going through a ghost town. It was deserted. There were nobody on the streets. And in those days, you didn't have bypasses around city. You went through the downtown area. I'd go through downtown Brno. You'd see an occasional person on the street, but it was sort of like people were afraid and stayed inside. They didn't, there wasn't this movement. And then I'd come back into Poland, and going into Poland was like going into a, like Times Square at when all the theaters let out. The streets were full of people and kids playing and bicycles and horses and Mercedes shooting around them. It was all just like a mixture of life and livelihood. So it was, I was surprised with the difference between what I had anticipated finding and what I really found. Do you in Canada talk about political dog whistles? Do you know what I mean by that phrase, dog whistles? People talking in coded language. And that's the way the Poles spoke. I mean, I learned really rather quickly that people say what they had to say, especially in public, especially when they were around anybody who might be listening. But it was coded. It was full of irony and sarcasm and people saying what they knew they had to say because they didn't want to get in trouble with the authorities. But it was like a dog whistle. The messages going out to other people were something like, well, you know, I have to say this, but don't take this too seriously. This is not what I believe. This is what I have to say. And I think that was such a part of Poland at that time. And I think it was that for most of the time I was there, almost everybody, almost always, was speaking in a kind of code, in a kind of sarcastic, skeptical attitude. They were doing what they had to do to protect themselves and their families and their jobs and to not get in trouble with the authorities. But they valued their Polishness, not their allegiance was not to communism, it was not to the government. It was to their own Polish identity to the extent that they could have such a thing, although that was a really complicated business, I think. And so I think that was always, like all the words you used, that was surprising and amusing and weird, because I'd never been anywhere with people who talk like that. And positive, too, because it wasn't a dog whistle in the United States is a pretty negative thing. I mean, it's the kind of stuff that people do to cover racism. They play on people's xenophobia. They play on their racism. They play on their anti-immigrant feelings. And they do this not by saying, we don't want any blacks voting. They say, we believe in states' rights. You know what I mean? They use code words to talk, to say things in a way that they don't get in trouble with the mainstream media, but that those words are thoroughly understood by a target audience that knows exactly what they mean by that. But in Poland, it wasn't a negative thing. I thought it was actually a very positive thing. It was a way to stay safe, to protect themselves, and it was a good thing, I think. I don't think I ever met a Pole who didn't like Ronald Reagan. They would say to me, oh, he's the only one who knows how to deal with communism. Well, maybe, but he did not know how to deal with his own people. Donald Trump is a political godson of grandson of Ronald Reagan. He is a master of what Reagan created and Nixon created, this ability to use coded language, dog whistles. Mm-hmm. But in Poland, it was positive. I think it was a good thing.
Did you ever find that there was a clash, or maybe a clash, between your values and the values of those Polish people that you met in Poland?
Well, with Reagan, there certainly was. Because
yes.
They thought he was wonderful. I thought he was a bastard. And yeah, I suppose I was left-wing in terms of dealing with people different from European white people, you know, because in America I'm mixing with African American people and with Hispanic people and with Native American people and with Asian people, and they're all, and that's been my life. So I think there wasn't much sympathy for that among the Poles I knew, but you know, I think that was just experience. You know, it's hard to feel, have a fellow feeling for people you've never met and you've never seen, you've never been around. I mean, I stayed, my daughter Laurie stayed. She stayed actually for 4 years. She stayed a year after I left.
What was it that made you stay longer? What is it that made her stay longer?
Well, Laurie wanted to learn the language, and she enrolled in a program at Jagiellonian for outsiders who wanted to learn Polish. It was a 3-year program. She began the second year I was there and stayed for 3 years and finished the program. And that's how she then was able to come back to the States. She came back and got a full scholarship at the University of Michigan because she knew Polish. And then at Yale, she had did a PhD at Stanford and had full funding for all that stuff. I stayed because it was wonderful. I mean, you know, I had much better students in Poland than I've ever had in my life. Their English was excellent. Some of them were just near native. It was great to be teaching once we started teaching, which took a while. And nobody ever said to me that I shouldn't do something. I remember at one point I was doing a class at your university at Warsaw, and I was planning to teach Henry David Thoreau's civil disobedience essay. And I went to the department and I said, are you sure it's okay for me to do this? I don't have an agenda here. I'm not trying to change your country. I'm not here to convert Poles to democracy or to the communists to democracy or whatever. And they said, you teach what you want to teach. Which was fine. And I mean, it's so I had better students, I was teaching more interesting things, and I was meeting all these wonderful people.
Can you think of some anecdotes, some examples of those weird, amusing, maybe surprising situations?
I loved the male story. We were warned before we went over to Poland that we should not use the Polish mails because our letters could be opened. And so they arranged for us to have diplomatic mail. My mail would come through U.S. mail. I put U.S. postage on it. It would go through diplomatic mail to Washington and then come by diplomatic mail to Warsaw, and then a package would come to Krakow. So until December 13th, I would go to Krakow every week and pick up my mail. Well, you remember on December 13th, that was not possible. You were not allowed to leave your city anymore, and you needed permission to leave the city. So I went to my shepherd, you know, the person assigned to me who was supposed to help me deal with Polish bureaucracy and things, and said, is there any way you could get me permission to leave the city every week or so and go over to Krakow because I can't get my mail? And he said, oh, boy, this is going to be a hard sell. He said, the authorities are not giving people permission to leave the city. But he said, I'll try. So he came back a few days later and he said, well, it was impossible to get you permission to go to Krakow. And then his face lit up and he said, but I got you an order to go to Krakow. He had this piece of this document that ordered me to go to Krakow once a week to go to the American consulate to get my mail. And you know, this is what I mean by it was theater for you Poles. I mean, it was play acting. It was remembering. And then the other crazy thing, I think I learned that even the people who supported the communist system had ambiguous feelings toward it. And it even extended to officials. So, for example, I was never afraid of the Polish police. My Polish friends would say, well, you're crazy. You don't go talk to a policeman. Well, they never bothered me. At one point, it must have been at the beginning of the year, I was moving stuff in my car to that apartment. This was the third year I was there. And by that point, I knew Poland pretty well. I had never been stopped or questioned by anybody in those first 2 years. But there I was going to, driving from Katowice to Warsaw in my blue car. And I had one of everything that I thought I would need for the time I was there. I had kitchen utensils and I had books and papers and clothes. And the car was full of stuff. I had a lot of books. You know, my trunk was full. My back seat was piled up with everything from. And the policeman stopped me. And they stopped me on the road. They pulled me over on the road. And that was the first time I was just worried and tongue-tied. And I had to get out of the car. And they said, what's in your car? And you know, you remember my Polish was never very good. I never did learn much Polish. Although your students never believed that. I think the students in Warsaw were convinced that I was some kind of secret agent or something and that I really was fully fluent in Polish. I understood some things, you know, and they'd be talking among themselves and I would say something in English to make it perfectly clear that I knew what they were talking about, and they would look at each other and they'd say, see, he understands everything, which was never true, but they thought that. At any rate, I was completely paralyzed and I looked in the window. There was a fork sticking out of with a spoon in it, and I said, I have a fork. Of the Dalits. And the guy looked at me and he said, a fork. I said, yeah, I have a fork. I don't know what was in his mind if I had a fork that filled the whole car. And he looked at me and he shook his head and he said, okay, go ahead. Somehow people were going through the motions. The guy obviously had to stop me and he had to ask me questions. But he wasn't going to do me any harm. And he was doing what he had to do. The police always knew who I was. I mean, they didn't know who I was personally, but because I had a green license plate, different from everybody else's, and the codes on there, the numbers on there, told them that I was from Katowice, that I worked at the university, and that I was a foreigner. So they didn't know my name, but they knew doggone well before I got out of the car, they knew what I was doing there, why. Right. I was who I was. So when I was stopped, I thought, oh boy, this isn't a random check. They're stopping me because there's something about that license plate that makes me look suspicious. So I was, I knew that our rooms were being bugged because the elevator was only supposed to go from, I think I was on the second or third floor. It was only supposed to go to the ground level. But apparently there was a level below that. And one day the elevator must have misfunctioned because I opened the door, the doors open, and there I was one level below the street level, and there were all these people sitting at their, you know, like a telephone switchboard with mics and things in their ears. And I guess I was stunned. I didn't know what this were. I looked at them. They looked at me. They said, Jane Dobry. I said, Jane Dobry. They closed the door. So I knew that the apartment was being bugged. Which is, you know, we were all briefed on that. I mean, we were told probably wherever you go, you're going to be bugged. And there was this sort of thing you did. And I remember in Katowice, we'd all be sitting around. And when somebody got on a subject that looked a little suspicious, everybody just pointed up at the ceiling, or, you know, that's all you needed to do to say, watch what you're saying.
Did you worry about Poland and Poles, your friends, when you were, because you were there at a pretty dramatic time?
Yes, I was worried about them. Yeah. To get into our building, you had to go through, you had to have to sign in. I mean, we were allowed to go in without signing in because the guards knew who we were, but any visitor had to sign in. And after the 13th of December, nobody ever visited me again. No Pole ever came again. And they, you know, they were, I was worried about them because they would explain to me, they would say, look, nobody's going to send me to Siberia. That's not going to happen anymore. That's not the way it works. But they said, if I sign in, there's going to be a record of that. And it's going to show up on my record. And when I apply to go outside the country for a conference, it could keep me from going. Or it could have damaged my wife or my family from going. So don't take this personally, but we can't come to see you anymore. You can come to see us, which we did, of course. Didn't want to do anything to get anybody in trouble. And I had been keeping a diary, a pretty detailed diary of everything. And on December 13th, I burned the whole thing because even though I was not writing anybody's name in, I was using codes just in case, but I thought there's just too much detail in here. And I never wrote anything down again after that, simply not because of me. I mean,
during those years you spent in Poland, did your image of Poland and Poles change? And
it takes a long time to get to know people. It doesn't happen overnight. So I think the more I worked with people, the more I lived there and got a feel and a taste of the country and got to meet people, the more I saw life from the inside rather than from the outside, the more I could recognize how hard this all was for you Poles. I mean, I understood how painful and how frustrating living the kinds of lives you were living were, how much it hurt, really, because I think the best of the... Now, remember, I was with you intellectuals. I was with people who spoke English for the most part, not only, but mostly, people who had access to Western media, Western newspapers, the BBC, the Voice of America, the embassies, the Americans, the Brits, the people who spoke English around there, the Australians, actually, the New Zealanders. The Poles I knew were a very sophisticated, highly educated, well-informed group of people. And for them, it seemed to me that it was painful because people struggled with what it meant to be Polish, what it meant to have a Polish identity. It was terrible for them. They identified with some things like their landscape and their, you know, with Mickiewicz and with Chopin and with the culture and with the mountains and the, but not with the economy, not with the economic system, not with the government, not with the constant communist propaganda on the signs all over the place. Every bridge, every building had some kind of socialism sign on there, and with the need for constant acting and constant performance, because that's what you had to be doing publicly as you spoke. You were never really, people weren't free to say what they wanted. What I think I came to see is that people were outsiders on their native ground. They were outsiders in their own country, and they felt it, and it was hard. It was painful. It was bad for them, and they hated that feeling. That, you know, they felt like they couldn't. They were home, but they weren't at home, if you know what I mean in English. They didn't have that feeling that somehow, this is mine.
Did you at that point ever think it could change?
I remember we had a party, And I think it was after I got back from Poland. We had a New Year's Eve party in the States. I was back in the States. It must have been in 84 then. We were to write down on a piece of paper what we thought was likely and unlikely to happen over the next 5, 10, 20, 30 years. And I remember writing down something like, I don't expect to live to see the end of communism. Because no, it did not look very optimistic when I left. I mean, it was the third year and nothing seemed to be going anywhere.
If you look back at that time, what did you learn?
Well, two things. I think the polls were right and wrong. So many people told me, I could almost had the talk memorized, that they saw Poland as a country that was, in a sense, a model for the world because of suffering in place of other people suffering, sort of like a Christ figure. I mean, my religious friends always said that. Well, you know the story. And to some extent, I suppose there was something to that compared with other countries in Europe, in Western Europe, or Central Europe, however you want to say that. Poland certainly paid its dues in the way that some other countries did not. But boy, after some time in India, lots of countries suffer for other people. And if you're going to put suffering at the top of the list, Poland probably isn't terribly competitive in that area. I always remember Monique, who had come from 3 years in Riga in Latvia and a year in St. Petersburg or Leningrad. And she said what she was stunned with, her memory of Poland is just how much there was of everything. Everything was available. She said when after her years in Riga, she had driven to Poland and she had brought everything that she could possibly need, cans of all kinds of food, because she said there were such food shortages. She said when she got to Poland and she went into the store, she just laughed. She said this was ridiculous. Everything was there compared with life in parts of Russia. And she was not in Siberia. But no, I do think the Poles were right about one thing. I don't think you can underestimate the power of what Solidarność and Solidarity and Wałęsa did. I mean, that Nobel Prize of his was deserved. He dealt with oppression, terrible oppression, without a Kalashnikov, without a bomb. He didn't lash out in anger at people who were unjustly oppressing the Polish people. And in a sense, he was, in effect, he was channeling the Polish people because they behaved that way too. They did not go out to kill their oppressors. They didn't blow people up. They didn't, you know, they followed, in my country, Henry David Thoreau, and in India, Gandhi, and then Martin Luther King. They practiced passive resistance to oppression. They had a hated system that they helped bring down. Because late, you know, by 1989, you could see what happened in 81 was the big, it led, I don't want to say it was a direct path. It probably would have happened anyhow at some point, but probably not that fast. I mean, Solidarity helped accelerate the movement toward the end of the Soviet world. And they did it peacefully and without ugliness and without hatred. If you want to learn something from those years in Poland, it was that Poles understood how to undermine an oppressive system peacefully and intelligently and with good humor. And I think that's important. I think that's a real big thing. The other thing I think for me, and I've been thinking about this a lot over the years, that feeling of people being, living in a climate where you feel like an outsider in your own world, in your own country. That, too, I think is a sort of a model for Western people today, or a lot of Western people today. It's a model for me today. I mean, I don't want to make America great again. I don't want to drive out of the country 11 million people who came here to find a better life for themselves and their kids. I don't want to build a wall along the Mexican border. You know, it's embarrassing for me. I feel like an outsider in my own country. And I've talked with people in France and in Germany. We have family there, and that's a pretty common feeling today for people, even in advanced democracies, to feel isolated and cut off and not at home, not at peace, not identifying with their own nation. And I think in those two things, if I've learned something, I think that feeling of what Poles under communism did, the way they lived their lives and the way they managed, was pretty impressive and pretty powerful as a model for people who were there and saw it. And I think also that feeling that I got from so many friends of feeling isolated and not being able to identify with their own world, the feeling that they can't be peaceful there, they can't be at peace with it. I think that's pretty common among an awful lot of people. I don't know about Canadians, but it's pretty common here in the States. And
when you got back, how did it feel to be back after 3 years of not being back?
There were good things and bad things. I was very famous when I got back. Because, you know, I remember the president of the university coming up to me and saying, "Do you know people know you much better than they know me?" Well, because it was in all the newspapers in 1981. You know, there's this American behind the Iron Curtain in terrible conditions, and nobody's heard from him. And it was, the newspapers were full of, they interviewed everybody I knew. And so I had all these invitations to go around speaking about Poland. I still miss the country. Do you know, I haven't been back since 89. I was there in 89. My daughter is there every year, and she always is saying, "Well, you should come." I miss the people. I don't think I've ever had such a nice teaching schedule as I had.